Montana talks here. Live and local. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, we got the phone lines open for you for most of the show here this hour. I know we've got a great guest joining us here in just a few minutes, Jocelyn Galt, Cahill, a great ranch family here in Montana. We're going to talk about some of the water rights bills in front of the Montana legislature right now. And, of course, now is a very important time to have these types of conversations because a week from Friday is when the Montana legislature hits their transmittal deadline. That's kind of like halftime for the Montana legislature for their 90-day legislative session. And so a lot of these bills, if they don't make it through the legislature or at least one of the chambers by next Friday, the week from this Friday, then they could be dead for the entire session, and now you got to wait two more years to get a look at it. But anyway, yeah, we'll chat with Jocelyn Galt Cahill here in just a few minutes. She joined us on the show last April, I believe it was. I had a headline on our Montana Talks website. Land Board urged to consider Montana water rights case, and the Land Board recently had another meeting where they made some changes to the way the DNRC, the Department of Natural Resources and Conservation, can make these water rights decisions. But from Attorney General Austin Knutson's standpoint, the Land Board did not go far enough. And so it sounds like a couple of bills that they're working on in the legislative session. There's a group called the Senior Ag Water Rights Alliance that's been promoting these efforts. They were at the MATE show last week as well and over the weekend. There's some changes they want to see happen. So we're going to talk with Jocelyn about that here in just a few minutes. But speaking of the legislature, this was kind of my rant earlier this morning. I posted a note on Twitter or X, formerly known as Twitter, earlier this morning. And what prompted my rant was this headline in the Billings Gazette. Tax cuts could save Montanans millions, but leave cities scrambling. And I saw that headline. I was like, oh, sure. Oh, I see what's going on here. So the state of Montana, the governor, I believe the governor will deliver significant property tax relief. I believe the Montana Senate, led by Senate President Matt Regeer, will deliver property tax relief after this, through this session. I believe Speaker of the House, Brandon Lear, and the legislative majority in the House, I believe they will deliver property tax relief. And so here you go. So the state of Montana can deliver property tax relief, but all the cities, how will we ever figure it out? How will we ever figure out how to give our taxpayers property tax relief? That's definitely today's all for Pete's sake moment, if you ask me. Not just the fact that these cities don't want to give their people property tax relief, but that the liberal media covers for them the entire time. Back after this.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
So despite whatever differences in approach they might have, earlier this morning, I got a chance to catch up with Speaker of the House Brandon Lear out of Savage, Montana, the Speaker of the Montana House of Representatives. And, yesterday on the show, we talked about this. Monday, we had the governor on the program. I've got a headline on our Montana Talks website right now. Montana lawmakers fire back at the governor. And the Montana GOP calls out the nine Republican state senators voting with Democrats on rules and committee assignments. So anyway, earlier this morning when I was catching up with Speaker of the House Brandon Lear, I made the point that it's like, news outlet after news outlet after news outlet. Anybody, we could spend all the time in the world talking about the back and forth between the governor and legislative leadership and talking about the nine and talking about, you know, Republican infighting. But that's why that Billings Gazette headline really set me off, because it's like, we are going to get property tax relief. I feel very good about us getting property tax relief, significant property tax relief. The rebate checks out of the last session were great. The income tax cuts were huge. The income tax rebate checks were also great for we the people. And look, revenue still continued to climb in Helena. That's why they have a budget surplus right now, because tax cuts didn't curb revenue. It actually brought more revenue in. And so it's just funny to me that the same media that will do a lot of stories about Republican division within the party is also providing cover fire for these big cities that constantly want to raise your property taxes, or at least never want to give you property tax relief. Anyway, so I was talking with Speaker of the House Brandon Lehr, and I made that point that, look, I am confident the legislature and the governor is going to deliver on property tax relief. And really, if we really want relief, we need to figure out a way to rein in these cities like Missoula, for example, in Missoula County, where they collectively just hiked taxes for their residents 20%.
No, and that's the big part of the equation. You know, we can lower the property tax rates. We can, you know, give, you know, a homestead exemption, you know, to where for so many dollars your home is done. What we're doing isn't, you know, necessarily like a homestead rate that you see in other places, to where like you have an exemption on the first $50,000 of your home. It's just we've got different brackets. Up to so many dollars is this value, up to so many dollars is this value. But the biggest component in my mind to property taxes is local government spending. You know, truly what I would like to see done is the state collects the 95 mils for education, and everything else gets thrown on the cities and towns and counties. And that way we're not subsidizing any of that. If they want to raise property taxes, they can raise property taxes. If they want to lower property taxes, they can lower property taxes. Those are the closest to the constituents, so they should be the ones that are dictating at the local level what property taxes are valued at. And we are going to get something done with property taxes. In fact, today we'll have House Bill 231 on the floor. That's the homestead exemption. We'll have a couple Democrat proposals on the floor and see where things go. And so, tying right into that, we're trying to get some income tax. We're trying to get the state of Montana's income tax lower too. So, we're going to get tax reduction delivered to the state of Montana.
Yeah, and of course you did it last session. You did it the session before. Income tax relief, lowering the rates, and income tax rebate checks, and then the property tax rebate checks. But very clearly, I had a good friend of mine who's a political pollster, Evan Wilson. He said, "Man, I tell you what, the way people's moods are on property taxes in Montana, it is just like a shotgun, just primed and loaded and ready to fire." I mean, it's there's just so much outrage about property taxes, justifiably so. So it's time to really do something significant here. But I think that the local media really needs to start calling out these local governments more often. But instead, it's like oh, let's focus on the division in Helena, but not focus on the people that are actually responsible for raising your property taxes.
Yeah, no, and that's 100% correct. Just a shade over 70% of the taxes that the state of Montana collects is income taxes. And then there is just a small share of property taxes, and then a lot of fees. You've got the tax on rental cars and hotel stays and stuff like that make up the other share. Very few dollars collected. So any dollar that we spend to lower property tax at the state is actually subsidizing the local governments with your income tax dollars too. So it's truly Robin Peter to pay Paul.
Yeah, very interesting. What else is kind of moving and shaking in the House this week as well? And of course, I definitely want to get your reaction to the governor's remarks earlier this week. But although we had your statement that we shared on the air yesterday, but what's moving and shaking either way?
Well, yeah, today's the last day to drop general bills. In the past, probably 48 hours, we've dropped over 100 bills into the hopper. So the committees are starting to start meet at 7. Just to give you a few of the tidbits up here, we got a law that is going to protect auto dealers from being forced to buy electric vehicles. So that way, the big car companies can't say, "Well, you got to buy 20 electric cars before we're going to give you a gas one."
All right, another bill that Speaker Lear told us is they're giving another shot at trying to get Montana Supreme Court justices elected by district. And then another very interesting one regarding nonprofits leasing or buying state land. Stand by. Back after this.
Montana News Talk 970 and 103.3 FM KBUL. Your home for Fox News, Hannity, Bongino, and Montana Talks with Aaron Flint. Talking about the issues that matter to Montana statewide. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Yeah, the other bill that we talked about with... I'm sounding really low now. All right. Hey, stations out there, a little inside baseball for our listeners. It sounds like my audio was a little too hot before. Let us know if the audio is better now or if now I'm too low or still coming in too hot. All right, so there's the inside baseball. Drop our producer, Caden, a note, or heck, you can even call us on our studio line if you think we need to adjust our audio levels a little bit more. I know we've been tinkering with some things around here, tinkering with our phone lines a little bit. So, give us a heads up if you need a little more volume or a little less volume out there. You can shoot us a message on the Montana Talks app as well. Quick way to reach all of us. Let's see. Yeah, the one other, interesting thing. Well, there were several interesting things that I talked about with Speaker of the House Brandon Lear. But the other one, he's got a bill that basically would block nonprofits from buying or leasing state lands, which is very interesting, especially from an agricultural standpoint, because I think we can all agree we've seen abuses of that very front where we have seen, foreign-funded radical environmental groups like the American Prairie Reserve that are using their nonprofit status to kick Montana ranchers off the land. So that's part of that conversation. So that's another interesting bill that Speaker of the House, Brandon Lear, is working on in the Montana legislature right now. Before we get to our next guest on the show here, let me do a little bit of a backdrop for you here. I think it was last week the Montana Land Board had their monthly meeting. And it was interesting because I saw Attorney General Austin Knutson, he went on Facebook and he said, "Hey, I was the only member of the land board to vote in support of water rights for Montana ranchers." And I thought that was pretty interesting because, of course, who are the members of the land board? Well, all of these statewide elected office holders, and they're all Republicans. So I thought that was interesting. So when I caught up with Attorney General Austin Knutson, I wanted to get his take on this. Yeah, what was this whole discussion at the land board about regarding water rights for landowners here in Montana? And quickly, here's how the Attorney General summed up that recent meeting.
And the land board meets once a month. The land board is the governor, the attorney general, the secretary of state, the state auditor, and the state superintendent of public schools. It's the five of us. We meet once a month to administer all the state land, whether it's leased for farming, ranching, coal mining, oil and gas development, whatever. Water rights has been a big fight at the land board for the last 3-4 years. What you had is under the Bullock administration, the State Department of Natural Resources was out basically just trying to grab water rights. privately owned water rights from Montana farmers and ranchers. The NRC was out claiming ownership for the state of these water rights, saying that, well, because you're using them on state lands, they now belong to the state. I have a problem with that. A lot of these are historic water rights. They belong to farmers and ranchers. They've developed them. Just because they are temporarily maybe using them to irrigate a couple acres of state land, that doesn't make them state water rights. So that's what happened on Tuesday. Our monthly meeting was this last Tuesday. And we changed it now to where at least DNRC has to come to the land board to ask our permission to claim these water rights. So that's what this was. DNRC identified a water right. It was a historic water right. Belongs to a family going back to 1893. And DNRC said, well, but they're using it on about 17 acres of state land. You know, we can't prove that it actually was used historically on state land, but they're using it now, and so we want to claim it.
Hmm.
And unfortunately, Aaron, I was the only member of the land board that said, no, I think as a matter of policy, we should not be going after privately held water rights. I don't think we can make our case. I don't think we meet the burden. We absolutely are within our rights to tell DNRC, no, you're not going to do this.
All right, there you go. In the full audio of my conversation with Attorney General Austin Knutson, you can go back and find it on our Montana Talks website. But let's bring in Montana rancher Jocelyn Galt Cahill. Jocelyn, great to have you on the show. I know we had you on last year kind of having this similar water rights conversation.
Yes, thanks, Darren. It's nice to be here.
Anything you want to add to the summary that Attorney General Austin Knutson just provided before we talk some of the legislative bills in particular?
Yeah, I mean, he summarized it well. This has been, a fight that has been happening for quite a while, specifically over the last year. And, you know, we fought hard just to get DNRC to bring these to the land board for approval with the help of Attorney General Austin Knutson. And, we're glad to see that they're finally bringing these to the land board, but we think there definitely needs to be some more education about what the land board has the right to do, and asserting ownership over rights, water rights that are diverted onto state leases doesn't seem like something the land board should be doing.
Yeah, because, you know, kind of in defense of the other land board members, I guess you could say, well, hey, they are making some changes. They are trying to move things to say, okay, before DNRC strips away a water right, we want it to be reviewed by the land board. But I think I appreciate where Attorney General Austin Knutson is coming from and saying, no, you don't even get the right with or without land board approval to take away these water rights.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, one thing, not to jump straight into legislation, I know you're going to talk about that later, but there is a bill, Senate Bill 263, that kind of sets up this process. And one of the main components that this bill brings forward that is not currently being done is that it gives that water right holder an ability to be at that land board meeting and be on the agenda. You know, the one that was heard last week in the land board, that water owner had no idea that this was being heard. And then the land board went into a closed executive session. So, you know, I was sitting in the audience of that meeting. We didn't get to hear anything that the land board was talking about. We heard Austin Knutson say that he would have preferred that this wasn't happening behind closed doors. So the water owner had no idea that this was being talked about and had no ability to defend what they feel like is their water right and why DNRC via the land board should not be asserting this. So Senate Bill 263 would give that water owner a place on the land board during these discussions so that they could present their facts as to why they think that this, you know, that their water right is truly being diverted, which means there is no ownership by the state. We think that's one huge piece that is missing in the current land board meetings, is that there, as the water owner, you just have no ability to know unless you're checking the land board agenda every single month to see if your water case is going to be hit, if it's going to be on there. And then, you know, there was no discussion in the public as to why DNRC was bringing this case, what the facts of the case were. They went into closed executive session, they came out, and then they voted. So there was no background information presented to the people in the land board meeting, and the water user has no idea what what the facts of the case are of why they are saying that they need to assert this ownership.
Yeah, I mean, that just seems like common sense to me. Maybe there could be an angle that I'm missing, and I'm open to hearing another perspective, maybe from one of the other landlord members or the DNRC. But that just seems to make sense that the person who may or may not lose their water rights should have a seat at the table throughout the process. Should be able to defend their water rights, should be able to defend their claims. So that just seems to make sense on the face of it. Stepping back big picture again here. So last year we had the Montana Supreme Court had the Scudder decision. I believe I'm pronouncing that right. And that's what prompted even more of these conversations. I had a great phone call into the show from Alan Redfield, a former lawmaker and a rancher in the Paradise Valley. And then you joined us on the show. So in this case, they basically said, well, because, the rancher was using a water right to help with the lease on the state land, well, once they no longer have the lease on state land, we're going to take away their water right. Now, I guess if they argue that a water right only came because they got the state land, they could maybe make that case in that particular instance. But you told us at the time that the state government has tried to go even beyond that, where they have tried to take away water rights that existed even before a state land lease was a part of the equation.
Yes. So this happened to my family, where we developed the water on our private land. We diverted it over to our state lease to put a stock tank on that temporarily so that our cows wouldn't have to walk as far to drink water. The state came in and tried to assert ownership over that water that was diverted from our water right was on our land. All we did was simply temporarily divert it to our state lease to make it a little bit easier for our cows, and they came in and tried to assert ownership over that piece of the water right.
And what's interesting here is, what do we see at the federal level? What is Elon Musk talking about? He's making the point, we don't have a democracy if the people we elect are not the ones actually making decisions, and unelected bureaucrats are making these decisions and taking rights away potentially. Well, when you have the bureaucracy over the democracy, of course, we live in a republic, right? But to me, that kind of seems to apply here, where you have a bureaucracy making these types of decisions instead of we, the people elected, actually making these types of decisions.
Yeah, and, since this case or the land board meeting last week, there's actually been a new bill that has been dropped. Speaker Lear dropped House Bill 676 this week, and it has a hearing coming up on Saturday that basically takes this right away from the land board. If the water is being diverted from private land over to a state lease, it takes away the ability for the land board to assert ownership over that water right at all.
Interesting. Well, hold that thought. We got to take a quick break here. More with Jocelyn Cahill, Avalanche Ranch, right after this. Plus, I want to tell you about a group called the Senior Ag Water Rights Alliance. They were at the MATE show. I got a chance to catch up with Carl DeVries last week. But we'll talk about specific legislation to address these issues right after this.
This is where Montana talks ag with Lane Nordlund.
This week I'm in Washington, D.C., attending the National Potato Council's Washington Summit. And this week, Ted Shirky of Washington State became president of the National Potato Council, and he says it's vital that the nation's potato industry have its voice heard here in the nation's capital.
It's very important to keep our voices heard, because we have to be able to tell our story, and that's what's missing sometimes, is we don't talk enough about how things are affecting us. And even from the trade policy people and for the White House, it's important for them to learn our issues and to get to know us and be able to ask us questions in the future is more important too, and how their policies will affect our farms.
Shirky said the National Potato Council is closely monitoring the layoffs at the U.S. Department of Agriculture and how that could impact family farmers in the countryside.
Well, we're just still waiting to see how the shakeout is with all the cuts are, and we'll cross those bridges when it comes to us. But it's also important to stress the importance of having a farm bill passed and also keep our trade whole in the future, and then also make sure that we keep Mexico open for our growers. And trade is a huge factor because 20% of our crop needs to go someplace.
Reporting from Washington, I'm Lane Nordlund.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, back to it here with Jocelyn Cahill with Avalanche Ranch. And by the way, I've had their burgers at the Mint Bar in Martinsdale, Montana, and my goodness. But hey, before we jump into legislative issues and all this talk about water rights, let's just talk some good old beef for a second here, Jocelyn. I did a fun story for our Montana Talks website. I saw the Mint Bar there in Martinsdale. They did an update on Facebook, and for those who watched Duck Dynasty back in the day, well, now we're cooking with peanut oil. Well, now they're cooking with beef tallow. That was kind of a fun little update for those who have been following RFK Jr. and what he's trying to do to MAHA, Make America Healthy Again. Yeah, beef tallow, it gives a really good taste when you're cooking that food, especially with some good Montana beef.
Yeah, it's been received incredibly well. We're glad to have our meat there alongside the beef tallow fries and everything else. And they said that the reception to that has been overwhelming, that people really are caring and taking note of what's in their food and where it's coming from. So that was a great move from just a tiny town in Martinsdale deciding to do it. That's pretty cool.
Well, and the food was already great. Now I got to go back and try the side dishes with the beef tallow. So maybe I'm sure there'll be a few more street dances we can bring the family to in Martinsdale again this summer.
Absolutely.
Very cool. Well, you're also a member. There's an organization now called the Senior Ag Water Rights Alliance. I got a chance to catch up with Carl DeVries on Friday. Out of, I believe, Roberts is where he's based out of. They were at the MATE show, the Montana Agri-Trade Expo. I know, trying to get the word out on some of the legislative priorities and trying to get members to be a part of their organization as well. So he gave us kind of a rundown. But you know, you mentioned House Bill 676. What are some of the other bills specifically dealing with this water rights issue that you want to tell our listeners about?
Yeah, so SARA has two other bills that they're working to support throughout the legislature. And the first is Senate Bill 263, which is sponsored by Senator Becky Beard. And that is a bill that also deals with the land board. And last summer, Attorney General Austin Knutson made a motion to make it so that DNRC had to bring these water cases to the land board for approval before they asserted ownership. So if a private landowner was diverting their water onto their state lease, just as we were talking about, that if DNRC wanted to assert ownership, they couldn't do it unilaterally. They needed to bring it to the land board for approval. So we went about trying to codify this, and we took it just a half a step forward to make sure that the water owner also had a place on the agenda. So this bill would ensure that the water owner was notified that DNRC wanted to assert the ownership, and that they would be, this case would be heard at a certain land board meeting, and that they would be placed on the agenda to be able to talk about the facts of what they feel of why DNRC should not assert ownership over this. So giving it full process that the land board members get to hear, not only from DNRC as to why they think that they should, but also the water user, the person that is on the ground using this water, making their living from their water, and benefiting a state land piece with their own water, why they don't feel like ownership should be asserted. So we feel like it's an incredibly important process to be able to have that water owner in the land board meeting and hearing the facts that DNRC is bringing and also being able to present their own facts.
And I know there's another bill, I think Senator Barry Usher is carrying that, kind of dealing with some water court issues as well, especially given the fact that we've probably still got some left-leaning appointees heading up that water court because of the former Chief Justice McGrath on the Montana Supreme Court. But it really sounds like this House Bill 676 that Speaker Lear is putting forward seems like that's the real good one there, because it would just kind of bring this whole process of stripping away water rights from ranchers to a halt.
Yeah, you know, I agree. I think 676 does sound like a great bill. I will say that in the end, in order to make this happen, the governor has to sign the bill. And so, you know, Senate Bill 263 might be considered more of a compromise bill of, you know, let's give this full process. You know, House Bill 676 also sounds like a great bill if there was the ability to get this all the way through and across the finish line.
All right. Well, Jocelyn Cahill, great to have you on the show. Before I start getting into calls here, we're going to open up the phone lines. So folks, if you got something you want to talk about, give us a call, 406-294-0970. And I'm going to get to Lauren and Helena here in just a second. Jocelyn, anything else you want to share with our listeners across the state?
Yeah, I'll just make another pitch for Senate Bill 186 that has to do with the water court. We think it's incredibly important to keep those water cases, once adjudication is complete, that the water court needs to go away as it was intended, and those cases need to be in their district court with local, hearing it from a local perspective.
All right. Well, great to have you on the show, and thanks again for your time this morning.
Thanks so much, Aaron.
All right, appreciate it. 406-294-0970 is the number for you. A couple of minutes ago, I said, well, now we're cooking with peanut oil. Actually, scratch that. Now we're cooking with beef tallow. Lauren and Helena on the phone lines. What's on your mind this morning? Thanks for calling in.
Well, it just kind of reminded me back in the day, when I was a young kid, I actually worked for McDonald's, and all of the fast food restaurants and pretty much every restaurant out there used to use beef tallow as their fryer oil. And because I remember, back when we'd need to fill up the fryer, we'd roll out this big chunk of lard and start putting more into the thing to melt it down. And I really kind of feel like it was almost healthier back then, because then all of a sudden in the late 80s, early 90s, there was a big thing about saturated fats and how beef tallow is so bad for you. But then we switched over to vegetable oil and canola oil, and I think that it's almost like from that point on, America started getting progressively fatter and fatter and fatter.
And other health problems. Well, that's exactly what Robert F. Everything you just said right there is exactly what Robert F. Kennedy Jr. has been talking about and what he's trying to bring about in changes. In fact, Brian Massard is a former president of the Montana Stockgrowers Association. He's got Reminisce Angus down in Dillon. He's been working very closely with RFK Jr., and they've both been preaching this, that when our own government started discriminating against beef or just meat producers in general by going on this anti-saturated fat campaign, they actually made America less healthy, and they were discriminating against beef. And now when we see the global climate alarmists targeting, production agriculture, we know exactly why they were discriminated against beef, because they don't want us here. Why do you think they prop up the American Prairie Reserve? They don't want ranchers in Montana ranching on the land. And so it's going to be huge to see what RFK Jr. Does to bring about this change, because, yeah, I think you're going to see more and more people going back to beef tallow, just like the Mint in Martinsdale says, hey, we're cooking with beef tallow.
Well, and even the beef production, I don't know if you've ever noticed, but a pound of ground turkey meat costs less than a pound of ground beef, but yet beef production produces less environmental impacts than hundreds and thousands of birds in order to produce the same thing. You're producing either ground beef or ground turkey for your ground meat, and it's more productive, more easier on the environment, and easier all around to produce mass quantities of beef than it is to produce mass quantities of turkey.
Yeah, it's actually helpful. It's actually helpful for the environment. I mean, what these ranchers do to help the environment and preserve open space and so much, it's incredibly helpful for the environment. That's why our farmers and ranchers are the real environmentalists, not these crooks for these phony environmental groups that just want to shake down people for cash to fund their lawsuits. Now, of course, your seed oil producers out there, are getting a little nervous at this push away from the seed oils to things like beef tallow. But I think that's why you're also seeing more and more of a push out of the Trump administration to emphasize, biofuels and particularly exporting biofuels. There was a bit of a row with Brazil where Brazil was saying, hey, you shouldn't be blocking our products. And then the U.S. responded, well, you're blocking our products. So I think that's why you're seeing a continued emphasis of biofuels from the Trump administration as well. If I'm not mistaken, like Calumet Refinery in Great Falls, I mean, they could use beef tallow to make jet fuel. And they can use seed oils to make jet fuel. I hope I used the right terminology there. But if I'm not mistaken, I think that they're doing just that already, right?
Well, you could even just use seed oil to make biodiesel, like you were saying. I mean, you could some of the older diesel trucks, you could actually just put in straight-up peanut oil with a proper filter on there, and it'll run.
See, you're still cooking with engine. Peanut oil. You're still cooking. See, there you go. You can cook with beef tallow and peanut oil.
The original diesel engine was designed by, you know, the inventor to run off of peanut oil.
Interesting. All right. Well, hey, now we're cooking with peanut oil. All right, Lauren, appreciate the phone call. Thanks for calling in. 406-294-0970, the number for you. Call right now.
Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
When I hear lima beans, all I hear is Al Gore, llama beans, gamma lung disease. The great Rush Limbaugh, man, I loved it when he would talk about Alger. When he would talk about Al Gore, you're going to get Lyme disease from your... That's when I hear lima beans, and I actually like lima beans. You know, even when they served it in the military chow halls, I love the lima beans. Just dump a bunch of salt, add some Texas Pete's hot sauce, and I like the lima beans. That's right, Al Gore. Anyway, Lucinda and Kalispell, you guys probably heard about this. So Senator Tim Sheehy, Navy SEAL veteran, Montana senator, he shared this story from the Military Times where in Fort Carson, Colorado, look what they were feeding the troops. I think we mentioned this yesterday when John Jackson was here too. Lima beans and toast. No meat, just lima beans and toast. And so Tim Sheehy says, you know, maybe they should add whatever general is in charge of the food to the list. Well, Lucinda in Kalispell asks a really good question here. What's for dinner? You would think beef's for dinner, right? Or supper, whatever Jim in Great Falls wants to call it. And Jim, it could be lamb too, right? Just get some stinking meat on the plate. What's for dinner, Lucinda in Kalispell writes. I sure hope the good men and women serving our country are eating better than the inmates. Lima beans and toast sounds pretty poor. What's the menu at the prison? That's a really good question. What do our prison inmates eat? Lima beans and toast? And do the prison inmates have to pay for their meals? Like we found out our military soldiers were having to pay for their meals. And then all of the money that they were spending to pay for their meals, where did that money go? And then all they get is lima beans and toast? My goodness. I think I've mentioned this story before. On one of my military deployments, we had to go through Fort Bragg. Yeah, it's Fort Bragg again. We never called it Fort Liberty anyway. We had to go through Fort Bragg, and I was lucky because I got to tag along with some Green Berets on this deployment. And so we're at Fort Bragg, and, you know, we're staying in whatever barracks they had us in. You know, for our pre-deployment stuff. And, you know, there's a chow hall right down the street. And you can go in there and there's the fast food line with, you know, corn dogs and pizza and, you know, fries and things like that. Or you can go through the main line and get, you know, your little piece of meat and your mashed potatoes and your green beans or whatever, right? And this smart Green Beret, like they are, these guys are just so smart. He says, we're going to drive over to the SWIC chow hall, which is the Special Warfare Center chow hall. See, because that chow hall is feeding and providing nutrition for future Green Berets that they want to train into the toughest, baddest, smartest warriors on the planet that they do, right? And I always joke, I was in a special operations unit, but I'm not a Green Beret. I just drank all their beer or their Devil's Brigade whiskey, right? So, but I had the honor to get to serve with these incredible, incredible men. But he says, yeah, we're going there. Why did we go there? Not just because, oh, look, at we're eating with the cool kids, right? No, it wasn't even that. It was you go there because you get more protein on your plate. You get fresher, better vegetables on your plate, fresh fruits. It was all about nutrition because they realized, like, hey, if we're going to develop warriors, we can't just be focused on physical training. We have got to be focused on nutrition. And that's all, like, you guys have heard me talk about, you know, our friend Dale Williams from Billings Last Diet. You know, and Tim and Savage has lost 90 pounds. And I'm not doing a commercial here. I'm making a point here. You know, he lost 90 pounds doing Billings Last Diet remotely out there on the North Dakota border. And Dale Williams says, you can't outrun your fork. That's why nutrition is so important here. But yet, look at how much of our nation's infrastructure doesn't want to actually focus on making America healthy again, promoting good, healthy, nutritious American beef. But instead, oh, here, inject yourself with this shot. Oh, here, take these pills. Oh, here. And then we wonder why our country is in the shape that we are in right now. All right, let's see. We've been talking beef. Let's talk copper for just a second here before we run out of time. Let's talk copper. Did you hear? So earlier this week, we were talking about the Keystone XL pipeline. The governor talked about the conversations he's having with the Trump team. And then later that same day, President Trump posts a message on Truth Social talking about getting the Keystone XL pipeline up and running. What about copper? What about our friends in Butte? What about our friends in White Sulphur Springs? In fact, that came up with the governor as well. You know, we would have already had that copper mine up and running in White Sulphur Springs if it wasn't for these liberal judges bogging down the process here in Montana. But President Trump just sent out this post on Truth Social. Like our steel and aluminum industries, our great American copper industry has been decimated by global actors attacking our domestic production. To build back our copper industry, I have requested my Secretary of Commerce and USTR to study copper imports and end unfair trade. There's more to that as well. Check it out, x.com/AaronFlint. Hey, if you